Is the DNA of Steve Jobs baked deeply into everything just said?
It is. It is. This is Steve's company. This is still Steve's company. It was born that way. It's still that way. And so his spirit, I think, will always be the DNA of this company.
Hello! Oh, wait, no, I was going to do my Santa Claus edition. Hold on. I got to restart that. Here we go.
No, keep going.
Welcome to the Cultcast. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Joining me today, he's like the Rudolph of this sleigh, lighting our way and guiding us. Buster Hein is here.
Hey, man.
Hey, Buster. Also joining us, oh, he's more like a Donner or a Blitzen. He's there, but, you know, you're not really sure how hard he's pulling, and he's always drinking too much before his shift. Leander Caney is here.
Thanks for that kind introduction. How wonderful. Not really pulling his weight.
No, you're just not really sure if he's pulling.
Oh, really?
He shows up usually, eventually. And then
I thought I was going to be Santa. Not some stupid reindeer.
But I was Santa. That was my Santa impression.
Oh, really? Who made you Santa?
Well, you know, I wrote the intro, so I guess me. You know what? You could be Santa. Give me your best Santa Claus impression.
I look like Santa these days.
That's an excellent point. Actually, I think technically Buster looks the most like Santa.
Well, he's got the beard, but I've got the gut.
We could strap on like an old white beard onto you. You should actually grow a beard, Leander.
You'd look
like ZZ Top if you grew a nice big beard.
I don't know about that. I think I'd look like one of San Francisco's many homeless people.
You're normally pretty scruffy though anyway, right?
Like, right, exactly. Cool, yeah, the beard wouldn't help. The one you know, concession to being neat and tidy is that I shave every now and again.
Yeah.
If I had a beard, I would totally look like, you know.
You're like, I'm tired of people handing me $1 bills. Every time I go out, people hand me $1 bills. And I'm like, I really don't need this, but thank you.
Yeah, right.
The kids are like, Dad, why?
Tracy wants me to clean up. That's my New Year's resolution that she made for me.
To shower.
Well, to clean up my act, yeah. She's thrown out all my clothes. Every time I put stuff in the laundry.
Yeah.
I get less and less back. Yeah, because it's going in the trash.
I think you dress fine. I don't think there's a problem with your dress. What does she want you to wear? Like tuxedos?
Well, she went out and bought me all this horrible stuff in J. Crew, all these hideous shirts.
Oh,
you know,
man. You're going to look sharp.
Fancy.
Man, yeah. I don't know about that.
Did she throw away all your Samuel L. Jackson Kangle hats?
Oh, they're all in a box.
Really?
Yeah, tucked away. Right.
Why? This is the perfect time of year to wear those.
I'll have to dig them out. I kind of got over them myself, though. I was kind of glad about that. Yeah, that phase. I'm glad that phase is over.
I really liked you in those hats.
I liked that phase, yeah.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
Come
on. Like, seriously.
You're one of the only persons that I've known that can actually pull it off.
Yeah, agreed.
Like
you're one of the few white guys that I know that actually can wear one of those and make it look good.
Yeah.
That's why we call you the white Samuel L. Jackson.
Right.
Most people's head shapes just look funny in one of those. Like, I cannot wear those. I look like a dope.
Yeah, well, you know, they're not, though. They're not Kangle hats. They're Garin Brothers, which is like a local...
Oh, sorry. The British Kangle.
Well, no, they're here in San Francisco. They're made here in San Francisco.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
What are they called?
Garin Brothers, yeah.
Oh, I haven't heard of that brand.
Right. Okay. Well,
should we move on to some Apple stuff? Welcome to the Cultcast, everyone. We do talk about Apple stuff on this show. We usually cover the week's best Apple stories. But, you know, this week being Christmas week. Is it Hanukkah week as well? Is this when Hanukkah is? Does anyone know? I should know this.
Jewish, but
Hanukkah is over, I think.
Oh, is it
over? It was earlier in the month, I think. But, you know, yeah.
Well, Merry Christmas to all of our listeners. Happy Hanukkah to all of our listeners. And happy holidays to everyone else. Bah humbug to those of you who don't care. We are going to cover our favorite stuff of 2015 as well. At the end, we've been doing this all month. This week, we're going to be doing our favorite movies of 2015. And I saw a movie this year that was hauntingly good. You know, like those movies that when the credits come on, you just sit there and stare at the screen for like 15 minutes just trying to wonder what happened? Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah.
That happened to me with this movie. Leander, do you have a best movie of 2015 picked?
I'll have one by the end of the show.
Okay. Well, I'll give you a minute.
Did you hit my fingers just doing a quick search?
Searching IMDb as we speak.
All I can remember is the horrible ones I saw.
Yeah. Gee, surprise, surprise. Right. So they're all horrible in your opinion.
I can start ranting about that, yeah.
Did you see Star Wars 2?
I haven't seen it. No, the kids of all, they went to see it yesterday.
Oh, Buster, you saw it though, right?
Well, twice, bro.
You saw it twice already?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, maybe we can talk about that a little bit too. Before we hop into the fun, I want to say thanks to FreshBooks for supporting this episode. FreshBooks, the easy-to-use invoicing software designed to help small businesses get organized and save time invoicing and get paid faster. I can vouch for this from personal experience. I pay for FreshBooks. I use it every single month. I love it. You can get started with a free trial at freshbooks.com/cultcast. Please enter cultcast in the how did you hear about us section. Also, I want to thank Audible for supporting this episode. Do you love books but find that you never have time to read? This is the story of my lifetime. Audible is perfect, and it's the perfect gift for someone who loves to read but is always on the go, because Audible has over 180,000 audio books and audio programs from all these different publishers, broadcasters, entertainers, magazines, newspaper publishers, and their app is free. It works on iPhone, iPad, Android, Windows Phone. You can download and listen to books on over 500 different MP3 players. And unlike streaming or rental services, with Audible, the books that you get are yours forever, and you can access them anytime right from your smartphone. May I suggest, Leander, let me see if I can get this right, Jony Ive, the genius behind Apple's greatest products, which Horace Dedue, he's an Apple analyst that you may have heard of, he said it's the best book, the best Apple book he's ever read in his entire life. Did I add the entire life at the end? But he did say it's the best Apple book he's ever read.
Best Apple book written to date, I think is what he said.
Okay.
Best book about Apple written to date.
Very
and the thing that you should know about Horace Dedue is he's actually credible, unlike my opinion. This guy's actually legit. Credible. Yeah, he's actually legitimate. So if you haven't had a chance to read any of Leander's books, the most recent being Jony Ive, this is the perfect opportunity to get his book for free, because when you sign up for an Audible trial, you get one book for free. You can listen to the entire thing. It's yours to keep, so you don't have to return it, even if you decide not to continue your service. And you can get started at audiblepodcast.com. You'll get a free 30-day trial, and you get a free audiobook of your choice. You could choose Leander's, which I recommend, but you could choose other books too if you want to be totally lame. And this is a good time to read Leander's book, because we're going to be talking about Inside the Design Lab. Did you guys see that 60 Minutes piece they did on Apple? I'm sure you saw it, right?
I hate to say this, but I haven't seen it yet.
Did you not watch it?
No, I haven't seen it. I haven't had a chance. I was out in Lake Tahoe up in the mountains this weekend, so I didn't get a chance to see it. I saw a little bit of the Tim Cook interview, but I didn't see the Design Lab stuff yet. I know, crazy.
You nailed it, man. Like, or the, at least, you know, from that video, it's like, oh, it's just like that video that you had.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. I'm glad
Hear Buster,
that.
Did you see it or not?
Yeah, I saw snippets. I mean, it's like 30 minutes or 15 minutes.
Oh, I know.
I didn't watch the whole
30
thing.
Whole minutes.
I can't commit to that.
ain't nobody got time for that.
Especially when they're like, let's tour the design lab. And I saw it's because Leander, when he published his Jony Ive book, had a whole like 3D tour of it. And it was really just like Leander's book or tour that he did. So
yeah, Leander, when you finally see it, I'm really interested to hear your opinion, because I mean they walk through it and you see all the designers in there working and stuff, and it wasn't nearly as I don't know, I was expecting it to be like all white and like, bright
like
and
a Steve Jobs chocolate factory or something.
Yeah, exactly, like very sterile.
Yeah.
Exactly, I wanted to see a chocolate river. And there was none of that stuff. It was still really fascinating, but I encourage everyone, if you haven't seen the 60 Minutes piece, to definitely go seek that out. We're going to talk about that as well, too. But audiblepodcast.com/cultcast. Thanks to Audible for supporting this episode. Let's start with this news. Leander, are you a Beatles fan?
Yeah, I love the Beatles, yeah.
Now, tell me, speaking for all British people, as we often have you do, how do British people feel about the Beatles? Are they do they really all love the Beatles, or are some people like, I hate the Beatles?
Who can't? Who doesn't love the? I mean, who could not love the Beatles?
I don't love the Beatles.
Well, I know in the 70s, you know, one of Joe Strummer's most famous lines was "Phony Beatlemania's bit in the dust." In London Calling. So the punk era, there was a lot of, anti-Beatles, Beatlemania backlash. Mm-hmm. But I think, it's mellowed now. And yeah, they're a national treasure.
Okay, so British people really do mostly love the Beatles then.
Yeah, I can't, no one... I think it's hard to deny that the genius of that group and what an astonishing career and what astonishing music they made. I mean, because they were like true artists, weren't they? I mean, they were commercial, but they developed. Everything was different. And they never really stood still. Yeah, they're amazing, musicians.
So you may be excited to hear then that I didn't realize they hadn't done this. All their catalog is coming to different streaming services, including Apple Music, but it looks like it's also going to be on Spotify, Google Play, and. Oh, geez, is Tidal still around?
Tidal? Oh.
The worst $60 million Jay-Z ever spent, Tidal.
Their albums were just made available.
Yeah, it's around for now. So on Christmas Eve, it's going to be, their entire catalog is going to be available for streaming.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, that'll be good.
I all respect to the Beatles, I'm not a fan of most of their music. Some of their stuff is amazing. I saw their Cirque du Soleil show in Vegas called Love. Have you guys seen it?
I haven't seen it. I heard of it.
No, I haven't.
It's all Beatles music, and it was one of the most amazing theatrical performances I have ever seen in my entire life, and that actually kind of made me more of a Beatles fan. Hmm. What's up, Buster?
Nothing.
Were you going to say something?
No. Well, a long time ago.
Oh, what was it going to be?
Just that they've been on iTunes for like forever.
Okay, so if you wanted to buy their music, they were on iTunes.
Yeah, because I remember
that was a big deal too, just like two or three years ago. Yeah, before Steve Jobs died.
Well, right. I remember Steve Jobs, saying, being very proud that they were going to be, coming to iTunes, and there was the whole front page of Apple's site had a picture of the group, right? One of the they promoted it really heavily. Yeah, but I didn't know that you couldn't stream it.
Apparently, we've all been seeking the Beatles, trying to listen to it. I don't know how big of a Beatles fan you actually are, Leander. You didn't try to stream it.
Well, I have, I have all the albums. I've had them forever.
So you don't need to stream it.
In various formats. I mean, I've had records, CDs, tapes, MP3s.
Eight
tracks. You know what it's like? You keep have to buy and rebuy.
I know. It's a racket.
In different formats. And like, the Beatles catalog, I like the later stuff much better than the early. I can't stand it. In fact, I cannot stand some of the earlier stuff, when they were like a boy band.
I thought that would have been your favorite era.
No. I like when they started taking drugs, they become a lot more interesting.
let's move on to some sexier news. Buster, do you want to walk us through this one?
What is it?
Oh, you want to talk about
I do.
The sexiest emojis of all time.
The biggest app of the year.
Biggest app, best app?
Definitely biggest app. Definitely biggest. And it just came out this week, and it's called Kimoji.
Yeah, Kimoji.
Kimoji. Doesn't that just sound sexy?
It sounds very erotic. Tell me more about it.
It's basically just 250 different emojis of Kim Kardashian's ass. And boobs. And boobs.
And some of them are like very scantily clad.
Like, I don't even know, man. It's the top app in the App Store too, man. Highest this grossing. It's just, I don't know.
In the US App Store.
Yeah.
Let's hope that other countries in the world are not paying any money for this.
Oh, God.
I think it's just a US obsession.
I can't believe it. But, I don't know. Do people in the UK care about the Kardashians?
What do people think about large derrières in the UK, Leander? speaking for all British people, are they more of a large derriere group of people or a small derriere?
Oh, yeah. No, definitely large derriere.
Large derriere. Maybe that's why she's so popular.
Yeah, maybe she's number one in the UK appeal. App Store, too. Yeah. Maybe it's a universal thing.
I think it's universal, yeah.
Very voluptuous woman. But these emojis are like her bare butt cheeks.
Oh, it's like her butt cheeks. It's like her boobs. It's her underwear. Her face, like 15 different versions of her face.
So then, let me ask you this. If I were to have purchased this app and you didn't, because you're clearly more civilized than I,
maybe.
If I had sent you emoji of a large voluptuous derriere, would you see it or would you just see one of those squares?
Yeah, because it just sends it as like a tiny image file. That's why. It's not sending it as an actual character. Yeah. It's not really an emoji. It's just really, it's like the stickers that they do on Facebook and other messaging apps. It's just those little pictures. But because it's a keyboard app, a third-party keyboard, you can just use it with your keyboard. So it feels just as natural as an emoji.
Oh my gosh. We should make one of these for us.
I don't know if we could come up with enough, man. I mean, do we need some of our dongers or our schlong?
I don't know.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's going to be my messed up teeth, my fat girl, my pasty white skin. I don't think anyone wants to see that. Yeah, right.
Yeah, a beard.
Your Jufro.
It'll take us a long time. Yeah.
You mean a perfectly sculpted set of six pack abs would be something from my body.
Yeah, definitely.
That people would recognize. And then, I mean, we would probably also have just a rock hard pair of glutes in there.
Can we include like an alien butt probe for Alex?
Definitely. Yeah. And then we'll have a sheepish looking Alex E. Heath who looks like he's not enjoying it, but secretly is. And I don't know. What other stuff can we put in there? Probably an areola.
Oh, that's a few different sizes.
A few different kinds, different sizes, different colors. And I mean, that would probably round up the cult cast offering. And we could sell that. How much is her app going for? $1.99?
$1.99. I think we could undercut it. 99 cents.
I think 99 cents is fair for the cult cast emoji. You know, the sad thing is she's probably made more on this stupid app in the last week than all of us will ever make in our entire lives combined.
It's so sad. It took her two years to make it or get it made. So,
wait a second. Yeah. I missed that part of the story. How did it take you two years to make a bunch of butt cheek stickers? Like, how is that possible?
Yeah, how can that
be? It is Kim Kardashian, so they didn't, you know.
You got to make sure
does Kanye make an appearance?
I don't think there was a Kanye.
What about Saint and North?
A Kane emoji. Also, they were missing as well.
You don't get the Kanye Cobra in there? What is that? Is that what I think it is? I'm surprised the App Store let this in. Speaking of apps, so this is the best time of year to buy apps, to buy video games. In fact, the Steam holiday sale is happening right now. If you're a Steam person, you probably already know that. But also one of the best times to buy iOS games. Have you guys purchased any holiday games at special prices this year?
You know I only play one game.
That's right. You don't need any other games. Yeah. You already got the game you need, Vainglory. Well, for those of us who play other games besides Vainglory, I thought this was an honorable mention. So there's a ton of apps on sale right now, but there's also a lot of great games that have been significantly reduced, and I thought it'd be a good idea to at least mention some of the ones that I thought looked interesting. So, first and foremost, you can get DuckTales. Woo!
Every day that I've been making DuckTales.
Oh.
Did you ever watch DuckTales?
Yes, they were the best.
DuckTales, one of my favorite cartoons. And they made a video game, which I think was, do you remember what system it was on? Was it Super Nintendo?
I have no idea.
DuckTales made a really popular game. I think it was Super Nintendo. And they've remastered it. And now it's on iOS. It was $9.99. Now it's 99 cents. Act quick. 99 cents for a limited time. I don't even know how long it's going to be. Bastion, one of the best RPGs of like the last, I'd say, 3 years, was $4.99. Now 99 cents. Deliveries, which was, I think, my app of the year last year or the year before. And you guys made fun of me for it. Still one of my all-time most used apps. If you get a lot of packages delivered in the mail, it is by far the best way to track packages that you have incoming from virtually, I mean, like every delivery service, Amazon, Apple, UPS, FedEx, and they have a great Mac widget that syncs with the iOS version so you can enter stuff on your Mac and it shows up on your iPhone. That's only $4.99 and now it's $2.99. And then Leo's Fortune, which I think was, didn't we have, Adam Christensen on at our year roundup last year, and I think this was his game of the year, Leo's Fortune. Plus, you were on that, right?
Yeah, a lot of people. I think Apple say it was the game of the year?
I thought
it was some design prize. I think it won that design prize.
I downloaded it, and I still haven't played it.
Well, that's like, I downloaded Bastion last year, and I still haven't played it.
You haven't played it? Yeah.
I got bored about 1 minute in, and I was like, okay, forget it.
Bastion is like a... I think it takes like 20 or 30 hours to beat that game, Leander.
I couldn't figure out the first thing to do. I'm like, okay, I've had enough.
That doesn't seem like a Leander Caney type game, because it just takes too much of a commitment to do. You're a busy man. Leo's Fortune was $4.99, now 99 cents. And there's a ton more in there, but those are definitely four of the better ones I saw. So check out the App Store if you are looking to pick up a few games. And do it quick, because I think these sales end in the next like 2 or 3 days. So do it now. Don't wait. Let's talk about this crazy Apple special on 60 Minutes, Leander, that you said you didn't see. But were you surprised that Apple was letting 60 Minutes into their design lab and taking him on a full tour? I mean, this seems totally bizarre. They've been so secretive, and now all of a sudden they let people in for all the world to see.
Yeah, Steve Jobs is spinning. You know, he never would have allowed that to happen. But
why do you say?
Well, you know, Steve Jobs wasn't interested in the media at all, you know, except when it came to releasing a product. And so he had a very tightly controlled and strict, you know, sort of media PR campaign around. Whenever they had a product, that's the only time they would ever talk to the media. Mm-hmm. So they never talked to the media at any other time, with very few exceptions. I think the only exception was like, you know, going to the D conference. Mm-hmm. To talk to Walt Mossberg, and in the early days he did some you know, some behind the scenes collaboration with people like Fortune and Forbes, you know, so they could do this sort of, you know, Apple's back on track kind of story. They mm-hmm. were never really that successful, but you know, normally it would be like when there's a product coming up, he would get time on Newsweek or Forbes or Fortune. He would say, okay, listen, we're gonna let one of you guys, we've got a major new product coming up at Macworld. We'll let one of your reporters come hang out for a couple of days and do the inside story, right? The story behind this, you know, whatever the product is. So, you know, someone, and he would play them off. He said, but to get this scoop, you got to promise us the cover. So they would have to promise the cover of the magazine that week. Mm-hmm. And so Time famously did this with like the G4 iMac. You know, mm-hmm. remember that gooseneck one?
Oh, yeah.
And so he gets to come down for a couple of days and hang out at the Apple campus, go to a few meetings. He gets a tour, you know, for a special hands-on from Johnny Ive or Phil Schiller. And, you know, then they get a cover story out of it, you know, timed with the release of the product. And, of course, you know, they send out reviews to certain reviewers, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, you know, there was a very tightly controlled media playbook. And then and he would never let them in. You know, the Apple reporters weren't allowed within, you know, 200 feet of the entrance to the Apple campus. I mean, no one was allowed inside. So yeah, it's unprecedented.
Why do you think they're doing this now? I mean, because they gave them full access. They're doing an interview inside the design lab. The designers are in there working, and Johnny Ive is sitting there talking with Charlie Rose. It's like, here you go. Here's the entire design lab world. Right. Check it out.
Exactly. And I think more revealing was the New Yorker profile of Johnny Ive, but they're still, you know, they've peeled back the curtain a little bit, but not too much. I think there's two things. One is that you know, Apple is clearly a different company from what it was when Jobs came back, and it's now the biggest company in the world. It's hugely, hugely influential. They've had a huge string of successes, and the story's never been told. I mean, no one knows, you know, like I think in most people's minds, Steve Jobs was behind all of these products, and
like he was the guy who actually invented them, right? Probably to most people.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I know. Right. Yeah. And this is why that story persists, you know, that the company is in trouble without him, because in the popular imagination, you know, he was the one and only person. He was the person responsible for the magic. And of course that's, you know, true, but it's not the whole story. Mm-hmm. It was under his guidance, his leadership, that they became what they have become. But, you know, no one else has got any recognition. And of course, you know, hundreds, thousands of people have contributed to these products. And it's the result of a culture, you know, a company culture and of the people that work there. But it's, you know, it's not one person. This the myth of the lone genius, you know, I think they're trying to battle against that and get some recognition, you know, for the work that they have done. And I think it's also, yeah, you know, like the fact that, you know, Jobs didn't really care what the media said about him until the end, I guess, when he got Walter Isaacson to write his biography. But, you know, I know that there's been a lot of complaints about this, about the fact that, you know, that people think that Steve got all the, you know, that he was responsible for the iPhone and the iPad and all the other products. And that people didn't, you know, there's a huge misunderstanding about Apple and how it worked and, you know, where it's going. So I think they're trying to take back, you know, the story a little bit and try to have more influence on what the media says about the company.
I think you might be right, especially in that they spent a lot of time showing, they didn't talk to any of the other designers, but they were showing all the other designers working, and they talk about like the process they go through to design the different products and all the skilled workers they have in there doing these jobs. And they also mentioned, I think, several times that like Steve Jobs' DNA has been infused into the company, right? Tim Cook, I think, even said that during one of the interviews.
Yeah, right.
And maybe they are trying to decentralize that vision of this is Steve Jobs' company, he's not here anymore, and he's not here to direct us, and change the narrative to Steve Jobs lives inside all of us. You know, like he's in, because they have like they show like these huge like murals of Steve Jobs hanging in the different buildings, and they talk about how, you know, his spirit lives on in all these different places and the people working there. So maybe they are. Maybe they're trying to take the focus off of Steve Jobs, and then also I think off of Johnny Ive.
It's
because he kind of seems like he's on his way out to me.
No. Do you think so, Buster? No.
I feel like I don't think like within the next couple of years, but I think like it's a 10-year plan.
Yeah.
No. He's not going anywhere. No? I mean, no, there's no way. Anytime soon? And I think you know.
Yeah. What does Leander know though, Buster?
He just read a book on it.
Oh, that's right. You bought that book. That's right.
Never mind.
You think he will stay around? That's my. I mean, once he builds a car, what else does he have to design it at?
Oh my goodness, man! Are you kidding me? Like this is the most interesting company in the entire world.
Yeah, I guess where else could he do the work that he's doing?
Right, well, nowhere else. And look at the unbelievable resources at his command.
Hmm. So, well, I mean, do you think he'll be there for he'll be an Apple lifer in some capacity, always with the company, Leander?
Yeah, they put him into the sweetest job you could possibly have. He has really taken over Steve Jobs' position without any of his responsibility. You know, he's in charge of both.
He's
the
not like responsible to the.
He's
board
like he's like
way.
The Queen of England, isn't he?
Exactly, exactly, exactly. He's like a monarch, right? He's a constitutional monarch there, precisely. Exactly. Yeah, and he has, you know, he has the last word of all the design, stuff they do, and none of the responsibilities. You know, he doesn't have to run. He doesn't even have to run the design studio anymore. Richard Howarth is doing that.
That's right. And at the end of the segment, and we'll link to the 60 Minutes interviews. There's two of them, and there's part one and part two. You should absolutely watch them because they, if you want to see the design lab, it's just incredible to be able to see. Even though when you do see it, it's kind of like, oh, this is where they do all that stuff. It just kind of looks like a design factory as you would have imagined it. But there's this great scene at the end where they're talking to Johnny Ive and they're showing the spaceship campus, right? The new one they're building. And he has been instrumental in designing the new building. And he talks about, you know, with great passion about the glass they're using to wrap the building.
I mean, every single thing.
Apple's chief design officer, Johnny Ive, played a key role in designing the building. He took us inside on the same day Apple was installing the first of 3,000 sheets of curved glass imported from Germany. They will wrap around the entire building.
This is the largest curved piece of glass in the world. And there will be miles of this glass. So when we're standing here, you will get just a continuous curtain of glass and no interruption to the views
beyond.
All
the stuff we see there is all gone.
That will be gone.
Where is your office going to be?
On the top floor.
And he's also helping design like the stairwells, the doorknobs. I mean, he has his hands in all of those pieces of the actual Apple campus itself. And it kind of makes you wonder how much time he's spending designing Apple products if he is so spread out helping design the Apple campus. He's designing the stores as well. He's helping Angela Ahrens design the stores. He's helping design all the different desks, the chairs. I mean, the coolest thing I think about the entire segment was it's so clear how Apple does everything to inspire themselves and to inspire others. And Tim Cook even said, you know, this is going to be a center of innovation for years to come, you know, generations to come. And they really want to inspire people with it.
It is. There's about 3,500 people working here right now. And this is what people are commonly calling the spaceship.
Yes.
It's we're going to have about 13,000 people that are working in this circle. And it's going to be a center for innovation for generations to come.
Some have said it's a $5 billion project.
It's a lot. It's a lot. It's somewhere near there.
I knew $5 billion was a lot.
We think it's so important to have a place that inspires you.
And when this thing's finally done, I think it's going to be, you guys are going to laugh at me, but I think this is really true for myself. It's going to be like, you got to go on a Mecca and see it. I think you need to go down there and see it.
I think it'll be an amazing piece of architecture, yeah.
I wonder if you're in
the Bay Area, you should.
Buster, what do you say? When they're done building it, should we go down there? And
only if we're going to sneak in. I don't want to come through the front door doing things kosher. I want to catch Tim off guard this time.
So you're saying that we need to rappel down from his air vent in his office when he's not looking?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, y'all. Who is that? Buster! Because clearly
here?
He knows who we are.
Yeah.
What are you doing here, y'all? I totally lost where I was going with that.
Well, yeah, that's a shame. You know, it's going to be the most, you know, Steve Jobs said it's like probably the world's best corporate headquarters.
That no one gets to see.
That no one can go inside, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The design lab looked really cool. It was really fascinating to see all the different designers in there working because, you know, you never get to see those people. And I think the thing that surprised me was the age range of the people that were in there. I mean, there's guys who look like they were in their early 20s working in there. And they had people who were clearly older, you know, like 40s and 50s even in there. And it's like a mini factory. I mean, you literally get to see the beating heart of Apple because you see everyone working. They show you how they construct different prototypes is the word I'm looking for.
We noticed that Ive's studio is quiet and looks a lot like an Apple store. No coincidence, Ive designed both around his signature wooden tables. Here, Ive and his team create prototypes of future products before the specifications are sent overseas to be manufactured. With the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus, the design team made 10 different sized models before deciding which worked best.
And we chose these two because partly they just felt right. They somehow not from a tactile point of view, but just emotionally they felt like a good size.
Do you do this about every product? This amount of dedication to emotional context.
This is the tip of the iceberg because we've found that different textures considerably impact your perception of the object, of the product, what it's like to hold and what it's like to feel. So the only way that we know how to resolve and address and develop all of those issues is to make models, is to make prototypes.
And then towards the end, they take you to this building where they have all of their mock Apple stores residing. And Angela Ahrens has the same thing going in this building that Johnny Ive had in the design factory, where she has like these fake Apple stores that they basically dress up and make look, or they dress up so that they can figure out how the retail stores should look. I mean, it was absolutely fascinating.
Right. Well, this is a big secret of how they do everything, you know, which I outline in my book. You know, they prototype
everything.
Which
you can get for free on Audible.
Right, on Audible. Yeah, you can hear all about this. And I talk about the stores, too, you know, about how they develop those. Because they treated it like a product, and they prototyped it, and they scrapped it, you know, like just as they were about to release it, they realized that they made a fundamental mistake, and they went back and scrapped it and did it over again. And that's happened to a lot of the products as well. You know, like it's only by sort of building a physical manifestation, you know, building it physically and seeing how it works and what it's like, is that you can sort of figure out, oh no, actually, you know, we made a big mistake, and then going back and doing it again and getting it right
Yes, that was actually also one of my big takeaways from watching this too, is how much prototyping they do with their stores, with their products, and you get to see all that, you know, throughout the course of the piece. And Charlie Rose is sitting there in this office with Johnny Ive, and they have like all the tables covered. And Charlie was like joking around. He's like, "Why did you have all this stuff covered?" And he was like, "Well, because we don't want you to see it." And they both start laughing. And Charlie's like, "Well, why?" He's like, "Well, this is the future of the things that we're working on. You're like, everything is here."
What's interesting in this room is that I see these covers over some of these desks. Now, why is that?
That's so you can't see what's underneath, Charlie.
What? Meaning, if I could see what's underneath it, I would know where the future is of Apple.
You'd know what we're working on next. And so that's one of the reasons that it's extraordinarily rare that people come into the design studio.
And that's why you don't like people in this room, period.
That's right. We don't like people in this room, period.
And it's just crazy to think, like, under these veils, if Charlie would have been bold enough to run over there and just pull it off.
Right. Like a magician, yeah.
Yeah.
There were some pretty funny Photoshops after that. Did you see that? Like, there was, you know, like some cars in the background covered in sheets.
Oh, and, were there really?
Yeah, there were some pretty amusing jokes about that.
Buster, wasn't there a story that one of the computers that's, or was it a MacBook Pro, was back there and they accidentally showed it off to the world, not realizing that it was uncovered?
I mean, that was what people on Reddit were saying, that, oh, that there was a 15-inch MacBook Pro, the new one, in the back. But that was totally false. It was just a MacBook.
Oh, really? From the angle in the picture, though, it didn't look like a regular MacBook.
Yeah, the bezel looked a little bit slimmer.
Oh, yeah. And it had, like, angled corners and stuff. All righty, guys. Let's move on to the last segment of the show. Our favorite movies of 2015. I got L. Caney texting me in the background saying, he's got to go. So we're going to go ahead and move on. Before we do, though, I want to say thanks to FreshBooks for supporting this episode. FreshBooks, the easy-to-use invoicing software designed to help small business owners get organized, save time invoicing, and get paid faster. I think FreshBooks is an invaluable service. If you have a small business, if you're a photographer, maybe you are a graphic artist, you're a designer, if you have a business where you need to be invoicing your clients, you absolutely should at least check out FreshBooks, because it will make your life so much easier in so many different ways, and it's going to help you save a ton of time so you can spend more time running your business and less time messing around with invoices, trying to collect payments from your clients, all that stuff that is part of your business that you have to do, but you really don't want to spend any time doing because you don't get paid to do that stuff. Here's how FreshBooks can help you. A, you're going to get paid faster. So with FreshBooks, you can send your invoices so simply, so quickly, so easily to all your different clients. And rather than sending them a paper invoice in the mail, you'll be able to email them. They'll have it instantly. You'll be able to see right in FreshBooks if they've opened the invoice and when and who opened it. You'll also be able to accept credit card payments, bank transfer payments, and one of my favorite features, PayPal business payments, which lets anyone with a PayPal account pay you via their PayPal account. And they have an arrangement with FreshBooks set up so that instead of charging you the normal 3%, they only charge you 50 cents for PayPal business payments. Also very easy to do, you could take pictures of receipts and assign them to different clients. That way, when you send out an invoice to those clients, you can assign expenses to them. And with the invoice, they'll be able to view a picture of the actual receipt that you have to prove that you actually bought something for them. You can do all this from FreshBooks' beautifully designed web app on any computer, or their iOS apps are also gorgeous. They have a flair for design. I like FreshBooks so much, I pay for it every month. It's absolutely invaluable to me. If you're running your business the old-fashioned way, if you're sending paper invoices, if you're having a hard time collecting money from your clients, check out FreshBooks.com/cultcast. Start a free trial. Please enter CultCast in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's FreshBooks.com/CultCast. I want to thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode. Leander, we're going to let you go first because I know you have to go in a minute as you're texting me frantically in the background.
Right. Well,
so Did you have enough time to make your official selection, best movie of 2015?
Well, I was looking. I did a quick search right when you mentioned it at the beginning of the show, and I realized, that there was a lot of great movies this year. And
there was
a whole bunch on my list, that I wanted to see. Hateful Eight, Macbeth.
That's not even out yet. The Hateful Eight is not even out yet.
It's in some cities, right?
Select cities.
Uh-huh. Sicario was supposed to be great. Bridge of Spies was supposed to be great.
Yeah, that was good.
Carol was supposed to be great. Creed is supposed to be great. The Rocky remake.
Have you seen all these, Buster?
Yeah, yeah.
You seen those all?
I go to the movies a lot, man.
I was going to say, man, you've seen all these? Wow.
Did you see Straight Outta Compton?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw
that.
That
good?
Yeah, it was actually really good. Yeah.
You're kidding.
It looked good. It looked great.
I would give it was a solid movie.
That is truly surprising to hear you say. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, there's a whole bunch, I think. There's a good half dozen movies on my to-see list, which, because I haven't seen any of them.
I was going to say, did you actually end up seeing any of those?
The only two that I think people are talking about this year is The Martian that I've seen. Oh, I saw Ex Machina.
Mm. How was that? I did not see that one.
Yeah, it was okay. It was pretty good. Mm. It was okay. I mean, I wouldn't want to see it again.
And what's your favorite?
Out of the two that I saw, which was the two that I've actually seen.
Alvin and the Chipmunks. Incredible film. I cried. I laughed.
Unfortunately, it's between Spectre and the Mad Max one, Fury Road.
Spectre?
Oh.
Oh, Mad Max was great. Way better than Spectre.
Mad Max was good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I almost had a heart attack during Mad Max.
You did? Why?
I saw that movie in a theater with an upgraded sound system, and the drums the entire movie are just going, right? The entire movie, it's just drums, drums, drums. And it's so suspenseful, I can just feel my heart rattling within my chest because they kept hitting on those drums, and I thought I was going to have a heart attack because it was so intense.
Huh. Really? Okay. Yeah. Well, I didn't have that experience at all.
What was your experience like?
Well, it was like, I mixed. I liked a bunch of things about it, but then there was a bunch of things I didn't like. I thought it was way too long. I thought and it wasn't quite as, I don't know, it felt sort of CGI and fake. And
what?
Some of it was,
CGI?
Huh. Yeah, and in fact,
they did the whole thing with props, didn't they?
Yeah.
Well, there was a lot of it was props, but there was a lot of CGI too. And in fact, it's instructive if you look at it. There's a couple of clips out there of what it looked like before they
fiddled with it.
And you go, oh my goodness, it really looked like, it didn't look anywhere near as impressive. Nowhere near as impressive. In fact, it looked kind of ridiculously unimpressive.
That's kind of like every movie, though. It's like when you see the things they shot in the desert for Star Wars, and then you see them after they're done, like, color grading it and stuff. It's like, whoa. Right.
Well,
I can't imagine you go into the desert and feel like you've accomplished something with the footage that you got.
Well, he was saying that they're so good now, the post fixes that they can do is that, they weren't worried about what kind of day it was, like if it was cloudy, if it was sunny. It's like, okay, it doesn't matter. We'll fix it in post. They just went ahead and shot everything, and then it was all fixed afterwards, which I thought was kind of amazing. The cinematographer, said that was the first thing that what's his face, the director, told him was like, don't worry about it, we'll fix it afterwards.
It's like, I don't care.
And any kind of it didn't matter what was in the shot. They could have people walk in the background. Tourists. You know how it used to be with if there were wires or if there was a boom boom microphone in the shot, it would all be ruined. None of that mattered. Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, doesn't matter. Just keep going. We'll fix it up.
Even the sound too. They'll just go back in and re-record it afterwards.
Right. Everything. Yeah. So I mean, they threw that together real quick, and then everything was fixed in the computer afterwards.
That's amazing. They also go in and do the edited for TV versions, where it's like, instead of saying the F word, they say get the Frank out of here. It's like they do all those too, and then they edit them in later.
Yeah.
So your pick is Fury Road?
No,
then?
No. The three movies I saw, right? The Spectre, Fury Road, and The Martian. Mm-hmm. Right. So between those three, unfortunately, I got to make a choice in those three. And so I was thinking, which one would I go back and see again? What would I like to see again? And I guess, unfortunately, I hate to say, even though I had a lot of problems with it at the time, the Bond one, Spectre. I really didn't like Spectre, but it's the only one.
You've offended Buster.
It's the only one I would rewatch. Wow. I want to see The Martian again. Don't care about that. And I don't want to see Fury Road again.
So you didn't think The Martian was great, because that movie got so much buzz.
Yeah,
I actually haven't even seen it.
You haven't seen it?
No, not yet.
It's good.
I just can't believe how many movies Buster has seen. You rattled off that whole list, and he was like, "Yeah, that was good. No, right. Didn't like that one." Buster, do you see movies like every weekend?
Yeah, man. I mean,
do you have like one of those movie passes where you can just go see movies as much as you want?
No, you know, the funny thing is, like, me and my wife, we live in Phoenix, and we live, there's this movie theater in downtown Phoenix that for some reason nobody ever goes to it, and it's like $5 a movie. So we go quite often.
Is it like older movies?
No, it's brand new, whatever.
It's $5 a movie?
Yeah, it's like an AMC, and I think they're so cheap because no one ever goes.
I haven't seen a $5 movie theater.
Oh.
Since I was probably like 13.
Right. I know, man. So yeah, we're always just like, oh, that's, yeah, sweet.
Okay, so Leander's pick, strangely, is Spectre.
Have you seen The Revenant?
I don't think it's out in theaters yet.
I haven't even heard of it.
With Leonardo DiCaprio, he gets raped by a bear.
What?
You didn't hear about this? It was, the political commentator, Matt Drudge?
No.
Come on, okay, the Drudge Report, yeah.
Oh, I've heard the Drudge Report. Okay, yeah.
And it was a couple of months ago where he saw like an early screening of The Revenant, which is has Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hardy.
I like that you call him Leonardo DiCaprio.
Right. Leonardo DiCaprio. Leo. And it's like it's like way back in like the American frontier, Leo gets beat up by a bear. Like, he gets
okay, so he doesn't actually get raped by a bear.
But right, but Matt Drudge said that he gets raped by a bear and like caused this whole controversy.
There's so many ways to interpret that sentence. Yeah. Was he at a nightclub? What had happened? Yeah.
Did you see Inside Out, the Pixar movie?
Yeah, I love that. I love Pixar movies. Right. I didn't see Good Dinosaur, but I saw
that was supposed to
Inside Out. Inside Out was great.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's another one I want to see, because it is supposed to be great.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the good dinosaur is supposed to be great for the amazing sets they built, right? The digital
very landscapes. Pretty and stuff.
What movie is that?
The Good Dinosaur.
The Good Dinosaur?
I haven't even heard of it. How is this possible? You guys have heard of all these movies. Like that whole list you rattled off, Leander.
Really?
I'd say I've only heard of maybe like 10% of them.
No. Yeah. Did you see?
How is that possible?
Did you see Spotlight? The one about the
Boston Globe? I saw Spotlight. Yeah. And I feel like I think my wife saw it with me. She didn't like think it was that great, but I really liked it because it's really all about journalism and the team of Boston Globe reporters and how they like broke the story. It really focuses on that more than like the priest doing.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you're saying it's an action movie.
Yeah. Super action. Waiting at the city hall for like court documents and stuff. But they do make it interesting, which is
right.
Funny.
And like The Big Short's supposed to be great too as well, right? It shows, you know, how the traders work. And
yeah, I really want to see that one. I think it just came out.
Leander, do you need to get going?
I do, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, you have yourself a very Merry Christmas. Do you want to give a big ho-ho-ho to the listeners?
There you go. Ho, ho, ho.
Okay, I'm like a ha,
happy,
ha, ha,
happy holidays, everybody. And and have a really, prosperous new year.
And do not drink as much as Leander Caney will this holiday season.
Right,
and
that's one of my resolutions, yeah.
Not to drink as much as Leander Caney. All right, well, catch you later, Leander.
Okay, all right, see all you guys. Right. Happy holidays, right. Bye.
Bye. Buster.
Yo,
what's your favorite movie this year so far?
It was on Leander's list. It's Sicario.
Oh, I thought you were about to say the movie I was about to say. I was like, no, it's gonna be a shorter segment than we thought. I haven't even heard of Sicario.
So it's got Emily Blunt and Josh Brolin. Emily Blunt's an FBI agent, and she gets recruited into like this mysterious like government force, and she works down on the border. In El Paso, and I think in some of it takes place in Phoenix too. And basically, I can't give any much of it away. It was basically, it's like the government trying to kind of like infiltrate or replace, influence like the drug cartels. Mm-hmm. And it also has Benicio del Toro.
Oh.
And he's this really shadowy figure that works with like Emily Blunt and the organization and stuff. And it takes takes place in Juarez, and they're really like trying to shut down like the drug cartels, and just messed up stuff happens. And Yeah, it was just a really good movie, man. Like
So out of all the movies you've seen, which are many, best yeah. movie of the year.
Yeah, I would say it was, I would say that was like the coolest movie I saw this year. It was very like unique. The soundtrack was great. The plot was good. There's some action.
Fantastic.
But yeah, and it, you know, it's kind of gristly. Like it deals with like the drug stuff in Juarez, which I used like, cause I grew up in New Mexico. So it was, we always used to go to Juarez and like, we were always like scared to go to Juarez in the '90s, man, like super scared to be a white boy going to Juarez. And cause like there's, it's just, it was a very violent city and like, it kind of takes place in that whole like era. And so it's like really awesome, man. I loved it.
What about, so we both saw Star Wars.
Yeah.
And you saw it twice already, so clearly you liked it.
Well, I had to see it in 3D IMAX too, so.
Oh, that was that's how I saw it. How did you like the 3D IMAX?
I didn't think it added anything to it. I was actually
kind of
bummed.
It rarely does.
Yeah, there was a few scenes. There was like at the beginning, like from the previews, there's that scene with Rey going through like the Star Destroyer.
Okay, hold on. No spoilers, right?
There's no spoilers. Okay, no, okay, it's just, but like it really added like depth in that scene and like made it seem like a really cavernous place that she was in. But that was like one of the few scenes that I can remember that really stood out. That
I think it
like,
ruined some of the scenes actually. It makes them, it made them too real. Like, especially when there's a scene where a bunch of people are standing around in a spaceship and. Mm-hmm. You could see the thing about 3D is it adds perspective, you know, to the image. So you could tell like how big people are relative to like the place that they're standing or relative to other people. And it just looked like a bunch of dudes standing around. Like it totally pulled me out of the movie. And I was like, oh, these are actors standing on a set rather than standing on a spaceship. Did you find that to happen to you as well?
Not really with the scene, but with 3D, what I find the problem is because you need the glasses and you have to be looking at the screen straight on.
Exactly.
Your glasses fiddle to the left and it becomes blurry and you're like, oh yeah, I'm watching a movie. Let me fix my head or change the glasses. And so for that, I hate 3D because of that, because it doesn't look perfect the whole time, you know? Like it's always off or fuzzy if you move your head and shit.
And the other thing too is a lot of theaters, unless you're in a good theater, they don't have their projector set as high as they should, because if you're wearing 3D glasses, they're tinted, so they need to compensate for that by making the image brighter. And unless you're in a nice theater, oftentimes they just don't do that. So you end up with like a really dull, you know, darker image that just doesn't look that great. The theater I was in definitely compensated for that, so it still looked pretty good. But as far as the movie itself, what if you had to grade it, like, you know, 1 to 10, 10 being you loved it, you know, where are you in that?
I'd probably go with like a 7.5 to 8. And it wasn't my favorite Star Wars movie. Yep. It was a good Star Wars movie, but it was also like such like an homage to A New Hope and like kind of such a ripoff of the old Star Wars.
Yeah.
That I don't think it can win. It can be the best Star Wars movie ever. That's for sure.
I feel similarly to you. I wanted to love the movie more than I actually loved the movie. And that's not to say that I didn't love it. I thought it was great. And I'll share my favorite movie of the year momentarily, but out of all the movies I've seen this year so far, I would say Star Wars is the one I would want to see again the most. Even the movie I'm going to talk about, I don't think I would actually want to see again that many times. Just, it was really good, but once you've seen it, you've seen it.
I mean, well, like the fun of Star Wars and like seeing it over and over is like all the little things you catch.
Totally.
And then, like developing your own theories of, you know, this whole universe that is completely fake. And like, I love like all the fan theories that came up about Force Awakens, like, you know, couple days after it came out, and all these people like debating like what really happened, like it's real, you know? And it's like, you know, that those are just words on a paper. Like, it's not real. Like, none of it exists, but people get like so into Star Wars and everything that there's some crazy theories out there about like what'll happen to the characters from it. I love that part of Star Wars. So for that reason alone, I feel like it was worth it. But as a cinematic experience, it just didn't live up quite to the hype, but it was still way good.
I think that a lot of the dialogue for me either was awesome or totally fell flat. And there are far too many parts in the movie where the dialogue just fell flat for me. I was like, this is
like,
just not
which
good dialogue.
Character? For me, it was Rey. A lot of people loved her, but
really,
some
See,
of the times
I thought
when
she was phenomenal.
Delivering, really, I don't know. Sometimes, yep. like. And you see this on the trailer, so it's not a spoiler, where they're like, her and Finn are like running from like the TIE fighter bombers and stuff. Uh-huh. And like, you know, are you okay? And she like stares at him for a second and she's just like smiles. And then she's just like, yeah. And it's just like, they like really like slowed down. Like, I don't know. There's just like some parts with dialogue where I felt like it was either too slow or too fast or not believable.
Yes, so not believable.
And that's the thing about Star Wars. It always has like the worst dialogue too, you know?
I don't know. I rewatched Empire Strikes Back.
Well, that's the exception.
That definitely, I think we talked about this several weeks back and I was like, I think my favorite is Return of the Jedi. Not anymore. Empire Strikes Back has some of the best dialogue I think of any of the Star Wars movies. In fact, I would say hands down has the best dialogue of any Star Wars movie that's out there.
And it has the most unique plot. And that's what I really appreciate about Empire after seeing Force Awakens, because no spoilers, but it's the exact same plot as Jedi and A New Hope.
I would say it's similar.
The exact same plot,
but,
man.
But I did find the plot to be a little contrived.
It wasn't inventive, that's for sure. It wasn't imaginative. And that's, I think, what you have to give George Lucas credit for in the prequels, because even though they weren't the greatest movies, at least he did try and do something different with them. And with Force Awakens, I feel like J.J. Abrams just did his best George Lucas impersonation. You know, he took his favorite, the first three Star Wars movies, and just did like his favorite stuff from it. And there's nothing wrong with that. It was a great movie. And I think like, it just made me super excited for the next one more than anything.
I am too. You know? And what did you think about the ending of Force Awakens?
Oh, man. Well, yeah. I mean, I wish there would have been some more lines of dialogue in that last scene.
I thought the amount of dialogue in the end was perfect. I was like,
really?
If they change this by even one word... If there's even one word different that happens here, it's going to ruin the entire ending of this movie for me. And when we got to the end and it played out the way it played out, I was elated because it was exactly, in my opinion, exactly what needed to have happened.
Oh, okay. No spoilers, but what do you think about the death of that guy?
The death of that one guy?
Yeah.
You know what? To really truly express how I feel about it, I would have to read you this thing by this guy who wrote a summarization of what happened and then talked about why it was the best way for that scene to have taken place. Uh-huh. And it totally changed the way I thought about it. At first, it wasn't really all that impactful to me.
Not really.
But then after reading... Well, it was. It definitely landed. But then after reading this guy's description of why it was the best possible way for that scene to go down, now it's a really poignant moment in the movie for me because of the way it happened. It was just perfect for that one character. Overall, I really, really liked it a lot. But I was hoping I was going to have come away from it just totally in love. Oh. And I wasn't. And that's not to say that it was a bad movie. It was a fantastic movie. I just was expecting a little bit more magic.
Yeah. I was kind of wanting like lots of Jedi. Like I thought the Awakening would be much grander than it seems to be, at least.
I think
so
the
far.
Next movie will be.
You think it'll be like, oh, man.
I think it'll
like,
be more like
The
that.
Awakening was bigger than we thought it was.
Probably.
I mean, we could talk for a while on this.
I know. I maybe we should do
a special Star Wars
episode. A special include spoilers Star Wars conversation because I think that would actually be interesting for people that have seen it. Because really, if we're going to talk about it, it's like we kind of have to go into detail, right? Actually, maybe we should do like a special cult cast second hour Force Awakens discussion. We should plan that out. So my favorite movie of the entire year is one that Leander mentioned and then said wasn't his favorite, and that was Ex Machina.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was a magnificent work of art. It was so well written. The story was completely unpredictable, at least to me. You're an English major. Maybe you would have predicted it. But I was completely surprised at the ending. It was wonderfully original. I've never seen another movie that's like it. Yeah. And in today's day and age, I feel like that's really hard to do. I feel like most movies are just have been done before. And by the end of it, when the movie finally ended and the credits rolled, I just sat there and stared at the screen and watched the credits roll for like 15 minutes and just kind of sat there trying to wonder, trying to figure out what had even happened. Like yeah. It was haunting. It was that good.
Okay. I've been wanting to see it because everybody I know that have seen it, they've said it's like the best sci-fi movie of the year.
Oh, the best sci-fi movie of the year? Yeah, I would say that I probably agree with that. Probably one of the best sci-fi movies I've ever seen. Let me see if I can give a like a synopsis of what it's about. So essentially, you have this really brilliant, like Mark Zuckerberg type IT guy, and he has like this social network that he's created, and he is trying to recruit people that work in his company to come help him on this new AI technology that he's working on, artificial intelligence, and. That's probably all I should say because I don't want to spoil anything. But the AI is unlike anything you've seen. It's so hard to talk about it without spoiling anything. That's all I'll say. And this guy who is the head of like this social network company, he's kind of reclusive. He's very eccentric and he's completely brilliant. And so this developer that works for him goes and visits him on this island where he lives to help him work on this mysterious new AI. And I'm surprised that you said you haven't seen it, right?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, man. Definitely, by far, my favorite movie of 2015. But it's like I said, it's not one of those movies I would see again. Have you ever seen The Road?
Oh, yeah. It's like,
with
yeah.
Viggo Mortensen?
Oh, yeah.
Probably one of my favorite top 10 movies.
That one, really?
Yeah, I loved it. I like post-apocalyptic type.
Oh, you should read the book.
I tried reading the book, and I found it to be difficult.
It's very minimal and, like, I don't know, very, I wouldn't say dry, but yeah. I don't know. I feel like it's got such a hopeless quality to it.
It does, and the movie captures it perfectly. It's very bleak and a really beautiful portrait of what a apocalyptic scenario on Earth could look like. It was haunting. It was like, I came away from that movie so affected that I actually, every time I want to go watch it again, I end up not doing it because it affected me emotionally so strongly. Whoa. That I was like, I don't
sad,
want,
yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want to go back into that world, even though I thought the world was amazing that this guy created. But the book didn't have any punctuation, or not punctuation, it didn't have any of like those mechanisms quotes. That normal books that have when there's dialogue. So like,
yeah, that's
he said, she said, like it just has dialogue and you never know who's talking.
Yeah, that's Cormac McCarthy's style. He doesn't like to dirty the page with all these silly little marks, like, yeah, the commas and the quotations, and he said. And
but you don't
said.
Know who's actually speaking the dialogue because it doesn't say, like, I went to the kitchen, he said. It just says, I went to the kitchen, and then it adds the other character's line. And
I don't know. I just kind of, yeah, I think that's part of, like, the beauty of it is you kind of have to think about it more of, what it would look like and who's saying what. I don't know.
Yeah, that's why I ended up watching the movie.
So yeah, F that. I'll just put an hour and a half into the movie instead.
Dude, the movie was fantastic. But anyway, that was probably like my favorite movie of maybe 2013. I don't even know when that came out.
Yeah, it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and the book is a Pulitzer Prize winning book, I think, isn't it?
I don't know if that book is, but yeah, Cormac McCarthy is, I mean, he's one of my favorite authors. He's awesome. Wow. I love that. Just ugly style of writing that you hate.
Are his books similar as far as the premises go, or are they all just totally different from one another?
No, I mean, that one's post-apocalyptic. I mean, you can, like, there's The Road, or yeah. I mean, that's The Road. Blood Meridian is probably like one of his like most popular, and that's mm-hmm. like a Western, and that's just brutal, man. That is a brutal book. There's
is
like,
it like violent brutal?
Yeah, there is a there's a tree of dead babies in that, like Apache Indians who, like, as part of, like, you know, their trophies, they hang the dead babies on this tree. Or so it's an effed up book. But dude, the book is way more messed up than the movie.
Like, is it really? Because the movie was pretty graphic.
I mean, I can't remember in the movie, but is like at one point in the book, like, they like find a stash of food and or like they find like a cellar or they found a house and then they go downstairs and
I remember that scene. Oh my God. I remember that scene. I was like,
oh
yeah, it seems like that make that movie haunting.
Oh my gosh, man, That guy, I don't know. He's good at
And then at the end, you know, it's like it has like that sad ending.
Yeah.
But it's also somewhat hopeful, but still so bleak. It was just...
You ever see No Country for Old Men?
I have not seen that yet.
It's another book that he wrote that was turned into a movie.
Oh, that was his book too.
Yeah. And that's another like messed up like book. He's really good at like the dark, like exploring like the worst side of humanity.
Man,
it's awesome.
That movie has been on my list for years. It's like The Wrestler.
Really?
It's just like really high on my list, but I never actually sit down to watch it. I'm the exact opposite from you. I have a list that just keeps growing, and you seem like you're just like powering through these movies. Like you're just always going and actually seeing them.
Yeah. God, I don't know. It's just I'm lazy. I don't got anything more interesting in my life. that's the problem.
I played too much Fallout 4 and other games.
Well,
all right, well, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. But if you want to come tell us what your favorite movie is, we would love to hear from you. I'm at Aerofon, Buster's BST3R. Leander, even though he peaced out early, I'll still tell you his Twitter. It's L. Caney. And of course, make sure you're following Cult Mac for all the best news, reviews, and how-tos in the world of Apple. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening. A very merry ho-ho-ho to all of you. And we'll see you guys ho-ho-ho-ho next time. Ho-ho-ho-ho-ho-ho. I feel like I sound like that guy from SNL. That's just the voice I'm doing.
It's so Dracula, man. Dude.
You know, I just realized we didn't do a sync clap.
Yeah, we
so we
did
need to
not.
Do that real fast. You guys ready?
Okay.
Okay.
So we'll do it on three. I'll do 1, 2, 3. We'll clap. 1, 2, 3. We'll clap. Sound good?
Okay.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
This is one. Ridiculous.
Yeah, we. I don't know why we're so bad at this. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Okay. Somebody's like always late.
Who is late?
I don't know. I think
Leander.
It's Leander.
No, it's not me.
Because I go first.
Okay, do it again.
Okay, ready? So we're going to go 1, 2, 3, clap.
Okay.
Ready? 1, 2, 3.
That's not me being late. That's someone else.
It's definitely Leander. It's definitely Leander. Actually, that kind of sounds like, judging from the sound, it might have been Buster's palms. I can't tell.